This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. And now, our lifetime income experts, Jim Poplava and Kathleen Harris.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava. Welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income. On today's program, we're going to be talking about a strategy that can dramatically reduce one of your largest expenses during your retirement. Specifically, what we're going to be talking today is your tax bill. I know you just paid your income taxes and you said, oh, thank goodness I got that done. I don't have to worry about it. Well, remember, if you live here in California, not only did your taxes go up last year, but if you live in the rest of the country, well, your federal taxes might have gone up as well. And next to medical expenses, taxes could be one of the major expenses that you're going to face in your retirement years. So today, we're going to be talking about how to reduce your tax bill.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Harris. You've heard Jim and I talking about putting together a budget and the role that the budget plays in designing your portfolio strategy. Well, we're going to talk a little bit today about the impact or effect that taxes can have on your overall spending in retirement. So, bottom line, if you can reduce your taxes significantly, that effectively puts more money in your pocket and gives you a whole new range of investment opportunities as well.
And Kathleen, one way we are starting to see retirees reduce taxes is they move to a low tax state or a state that has no income taxes when they retire. We see this a lot with a lot of our clients on the East Coast where they move down to Florida where they have no income taxes. In fact, several of our California clients have moved to Nevada or Arizona where there are no taxes in the case of Nevada or low income taxes in the case of Arizona where the top tax rate is 4.5%. But that really starts on income that's over $150,000 a year. Under $150,000, the tax rate is only roughly about 2%. So one of the things that we're seeing is we're seeing two trends at the state level. Some states are becoming tight-fisted when it comes to tax breaks for retirement income. A good example would be states like Georgia and Michigan. But recently, we've also seen taxes on wealth. For example, beginning in June of this year, Minnesota and Illinois just added a 10% estate tax on assets over $1 million. So if you are a Minnesota resident or an Illinois resident, and you have over $1 million, well, your state just added a 10% estate tax on your assets. And that is much different because, as many of you know, at the federal level, you don't pay any estate taxes unless your assets exceed over $5.25 million. So here is one case where some of the states are basically choosing to tax assets in addition to raising income taxes. And just think of income taxes, how significant they can be. For example, in my own state of California, where the top tax rate is now 13.3%.
Jim, I know that there are several states that have no income tax or maybe have low income tax. What are some of those no or low tax states?
Well, let's talk about some of the states that have absolutely no income tax. At the top of the list, one of them is Alaska. They get so much money from oil revenue and from natural resource revenue, they've had no income tax, especially when they discovered oil in Prudhoe Bay back in 1968. So Alaska is one state that has no income tax, and I don't know. I don't know if you'd lived in the Sunshine State, if you'd want to move to Alaska to retire. A little cold there. For a lot of people on the East Coast, the favorite destination for retirement has been Florida. They have no income tax. Another state that has no income tax is right next door to us here in California is Nevada. And another state is South Dakota. And then, of course, in the Southwest, Texas, as well as the state of Washington and Wyoming. So those are states that have no income tax. Tennessee has no income tax, but they do have taxes on interest and dividend income. So that would affect a lot of retirees. Now, some of the states that have very, very low income tax rates, Arizona, basically has a 2% tax rate until you get up to about $150,000. Illinois has a flat tax of 3% on your adjusted gross income with no modifications. But as I just mentioned, they just added a 10% estate tax. North Dakota has a tax rate of 4.86%, but you got to be lots of bucks in North Dakota. That 4.86% income tax rate really doesn't kick in until you're making almost $400,000 of income. The state of Pennsylvania has a flat tax of 3.07%. 3.07. Boy, just think of how much money you could save if you move from California. And some of the other states, what we're seeing, Kathleen, probably 3 to 5%, I would say, is about the norm for most states. Then you have states like California, Hawaii, New York, New Jersey, in some of those states that have very high tax rates. Rhode Island has a tax rate almost 10%. Those are very, very high tax states. But I would say the vast majority of states have tax rates that vary from about 3 to 5%. So if you're living in a high tax state like New York or Rhode Island, Hawaii, Hawaii's tax rate is 11%. And of course, here in California, it's 13.3. So you can see right away, depending on what your income is and where those income tax rates come into play. In other words, they're progressive. The more income you make, you know, obviously the higher the tax rate, but you can see where that can make a significant difference in terms of the kind of taxes that you're paying as part of your overall budget when you retire. Taxes next to medical expenses are right up there.
Well, Jim, we've been talking about income taxes here and their effect on your overall budget. I know a lot of these states you've mentioned as no or low tax places are also lower in terms of cost of living, and a lower cost of living can make a huge difference to your overall budget and the longevity of your portfolio and its ability to take care of you over the course of your lifetime. Perfect example, you've talked about Arizona, Florida, Texas as no or low tax states, and those places are also a lot cheaper to live, especially if you live in California or perhaps New York. So cost of living is something else to think about. So it's not just about income tax. It's also just about basic cost of living. So Jim, in addition to moving to a different state or reducing your cost of living by that same move, what other factors should we be taking into account to think about minimizing tax expenses in retirement?
Well, the thing that's very important to understand here, in anybody that has TurboTax, has done their own taxes, there's basically two kinds of things you need to look at. One, you know, right at the top, basically the first page of your income tax return is the government asking you how much income you made. And they want to know it from all sources. Was it wages? Was it interest? Was it dividends? Was it capital gains? Was it distributions from pension plans? Even if it's tax-free income, you may not pay tax on it, but tax-free income does get included depending on your level of income and determining whether you're going to pay tax on your Social Security. So the front page of your tax return deals with gross income. And so we're going to be talking about ways you can reduce your gross income from a taxable point of view. Now, the remainder of your tax return has to do with your itemized deductions. If you don't file itemized deductions, you get a standard deduction and you get personal exemptions to arrive at your taxable income, of which a tax is assessed on based on your bracket and how much that taxable income is. So when you really talk about, you know, most people are familiar with reporting what their income is. They're familiar with their itemized deductions, things like mortgage expense, state taxes. If you live in a high tax state, at least at the moment, one of the good things about that is you get to deduct whatever you pay in state income taxes. It's an itemized deduction on your income tax return. So mortgage deductions, state income tax deductions, property tax deductions, charitable tax deductions, those are the more common itemized deductions, and that's basically what you look at when you're trying to determine your taxable income. And I think people would be really surprised in terms of what is taxed. For example, if you go to Vegas and you win a certain amount of money, that's taxable. If you happen to be winning the publisher's clearinghouse, well, guess what? That money's not tax-free. Or if you happen to be that lucky woman in Florida that won over $300 million, I think it was like $375 million, well, that's a big number, but she's not going to be able to keep all of that. A good portion of that is going to go in the way of taxes. Distributions from mutual funds. A lot of people are invested in mutual funds, Kathleen, where they're reinvesting the dividends and capital gains, and they think, oh, I'm reinvesting. I don't pay tax. That's not the case. Even though you're reinvesting, that's still taxable income to you on your tax return. If you have debt that you owe somebody and that debt is forgiven by the lender, the debt that is forgiven, here's a shocker, that's taxable income to you. Alimony received, jury duty paid, union payments, if you're on strike, unemployment compensation, withdrawals from IRAs, winning lottery tickets, that's taxable. Recoveries of amounts previously deducted from taxable income, maybe you had a loss of some kind. Pension benefits, and also beginning next year, what could be taxed if you have a Cadillac health insurance plan with your employer, that could become taxable under Obamacare. And also, if you get life insurance provided by your employer, if the death benefit exceeds $50,000, that's taxable income. So there's a lot of things that, if you ever get audited, sometimes people don't report this because they're unaware of it, but that could be taxable as well.
Jim, you've been talking about a lot of different sources of income that are taxed by the government. What are some sources of income that are not taxed by the government? We've mentioned municipal bonds here a lot on the program, but is there anything else, any other sources of income that aren't taxed by the government?
Well, sure. I mean, if you're a married couple, one spouse passes away and you receive proceeds from a life insurance policy, a death benefit, that's not taxable. Proceeds from an accident or a health insurance policy, let's say you get in a car accident, you get reimbursed from the insurance company. Most inheritances that you receive have already had the estate taxes paid before the principal is distributed to the heirs. That's not taxable. Gifts received, let's say your parents make a gift. We already talked about tax-free bonds. Child support received. Expense reimbursements made by companies to their employees is a part of their accountable reimbursement plan. Workers' comp, qualified distributions from certain Roth IRA plans. So there's a lot of things that are not taxed. So you really have to look at two basic things when you're doing tax planning, Kathleen. You look at the top line, what's my gross income and how I can reduce that? And then also what you have in the way of itemized deductions. Now, here's a little caveat I want to throw you. We can't really explain the full complexity of this on a radio show. There's something called alternative minimum tax. It was put into play back in the 80s when Congress said, look, there's a lot of wealthy people out there. That was back in the days when you had tax shelters from real estate, or just, you know, you could buy 3-to-1 tax shelters from oil and gas, real estate, other equipment leasing. They came in and they said, that's not fair for those individuals that make a lot of money, that have a lot of deductions, whether from tax shelters or itemized deductions. There's something called alternative minimum tax. And you have to be very careful with this, because if you have too many itemized deductions, you could get hit and lose some of those itemized deductions, because there's a separate tax calculation called the alternative minimum tax. Originally, it was supposed to go after Larry Lotsenbach, the millionaire type people. But more and more Americans, because of inflation, because they haven't really increased it, a lot of Americans are falling into that AMT tax. It's something that they didn't count on. You know, they think they know what their itemized deductions are for the state taxes they pay, the mortgage interest they pay. And then all of a sudden their accountant says, guess what? You owe an extra couple thousand dollars. Why? Well, that's the AMT tax. So you got to be very careful there. But for most people, what you try to do in retirement is focus on your top line sources of income. And two of the ways that you can reduce that top line is either tax sheltered income, like let's say you own rental real estate, or you own master limited partnerships, which are really stocks that are set up as partnerships that trade on the stock exchange, you can have up to 60 to 80% of the income free of federal income tax. And then tax-free bonds is still one of our favorite ways of reducing your taxable income. Then there's also something called tax deferral. But remember, all you're doing with tax deferral is basically postponing the day when you're going to pay taxes, because at some point in the future, whether you're putting money in a pension plan, an IRA, at age 70, you're going to start taking that money out, or maybe you have a deferred comp program, and you have to be real careful here as well, because I've run into several cases where there were a lot of deferred compensation programs set up for high-level executives at corporations, plus they've had pension plans where they've rolled them over into an IRA, and then they find themselves at age 70 in a tax trap, because between distributions from their executive compensation or deferred comp, plus their minimum IRA distributions, now they find themselves in a permanent high tax bracket. So it's a good idea to do a little pre-tax planning 5 to 10 years before you get ready to retire, especially if you have a sizable pension plan and you have a deferred compensation program. There's ways to minimize that taxation when you retire. So you have to be very careful that you don't get yourself in a tax trap when you turn age 70.
Jim, you've touched a little bit on what really amount to investments that are tax advantaged or tax sheltered in some way. I know that one investment we've been using for clients in terms of generating income, and we've had a lot of success with it, is large cap multinational dividend paying blue chip stocks. But there's also a tax benefit that retirees may not be aware of with these investments.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has heard this year that tax rates were going to go up on capital gains and investment income. But here's the thing, Kathleen, for most individuals, if you are single making less than $400,000 a year, or you're a married couple making less than $450,000 a year, the old Bush capital gains rate of 15% are still in effect, not the 20% that are in effect if you make over that level of income. Furthermore, here's one that if you are in the lowest tax brackets, those are the 10 to 15% tax bracket. If you're single, that means if you make less than $36,000 if you're single, or $72,500 if you're married, the capital gains tax rate is zero. So if you're in the lowest two tax brackets, your capital gains rate is zero. Otherwise, if you're under $400,000 and you're single, under $450,000 if you're married, you're still taxed at the old capital gains tax bracket of 10 to 15% on capital gains, or zero if you're in the lowest brackets.
Well, Jim, what about the Obama Medicare tax of 3.8%?
That comes in at a different bracket here. This gets a little confusing because this was something they threw in that people don't understand. If you are single and you're making over $200,000 a year, and if you are married making $250,000 a year, then you would pay a 3.8% tax on capital gains and dividends. So if you were in a 15% tax bracket for capital gains and dividends, you would simply add 3.8% on that. So you would be paying 18.8% if you were under $400,000 if you're single, and under $450,000. But once again, that 3.8% bracket does not kick in until you make $200,000 if you're single, and over $250,000 if you're married. And also, this gets a little bit more complicated. If you're single making over $200,000, married if you're making $250,000, you're going to lose part of your itemized deductions, which is going to raise your tax rate by 1%. But here's the real big secret that bond investors, unless they are in tax-free bonds, don't understand. There is a big advantage to dividend-paying stocks if you make less than $400,000 if you're single and $450,000 if you're married. You pay the old dividend tax rate of 15% versus 20%, and most single and married couples will pay almost twice as much if they have taxable income coming in from interest income, whether it's interest from a taxable bond or interest coming in from a note, or let's say interest coming in from CDs at the banks. One of the reasons I like dividends in blue chip stocks is they're taxed at 15% versus all the way up to 43.8% on interest. Most retirees, Kathleen, can cut their taxes dramatically by switching to dividends and tax-free bonds. We just did a retirement plan for a couple that plan on staying here in California. They were thinking about moving to another state like Nevada, but they love it here. They live here in San Diego where the weather is beautiful all year round. They like playing golf. And they just said, you know what? I don't want to go to some place where I can only live 4 or 5 months out of the year. I'd want to be here in California during the summer months anyway. So what we did is we did a combination. First of all, we did a retirement plan. And their combined federal and state bracket here in California was 42.3%. And we dropped that tax bracket to a little over 20%, reducing their tax bill by $30,000 a year. But more important, Kathleen, that was right there, almost $2,500 a month. I mean, that becomes significant when you're retired. Think what you can do if you reduced your tax bill by $2,500 a month.
That's pretty significant, Jim. And I was thinking, you know, also in this case here, we're also talking about not only did we change their situation so that they were paying less taxes, in other words, we changed their portfolio strategy from taxable interest from bonds and cash to tax-free bonds and dividend-paying stocks. So in this case, we not only saved them $30,000 a year in taxes by making this switch in investments, but we also were able to increase their income by over $20,000 a year by switching the investments that they were in to begin with. So net-net, they're better off today by over $50,000 a year. That's no small amount of money. But we did this by putting together, that word again, Jim, a plan. So without that plan, they wouldn't have saved that $30,000 in taxes or been able to increase their income by $20,000 a year. But Jim, I want to get back to this idea of tax-sheltered income. Can you talk about that just a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, Rob and I have often talked about this in the first hour in the fixed income section of the program, and that is master limited partnerships. Now, what a master limited partnership is a corporation. Most companies that are listed on the stock exchange are C corporations, and they basically pay a corporate tax on whatever income that they earn. And then if they distribute that income to the shareholder as a dividend, then you again pay a tax on the dividends. Some companies, you see this a lot with pipeline companies that transport either fuel or natural gas, they set themselves up as master limited partnerships. Not only do they not pay tax at the corporate level, which means they pay a higher dividend because obviously the corporate tax rate is 35%. The U.S. has the highest corporate tax rates in the world. It's one thing that is hurting many U.S. companies. This came to the front in the headlines a couple of weeks ago with Tim Cook, president of Apple, when he testified before Congress. You know, a lot of corporations are sitting on trillions of dollars overseas. The reason they don't want to bring them back home, first of all, they're going to get hit with 35% tax at the federal level. And here in California, where Apple is domiciled, they get hit with almost 9% tax. So, you know, you're talking about 44% in taxes. So the money's left overseas. Another way to get around this, and this is what real estate investment trusts do, this is what master limited partnerships do, is they set themselves up either as a REIT or a master limited partnership, and they pay no corporate tax. So the profits they earn, they can distribute to you, the shareholder, and that's why the yield on a REIT or a master limited partnership is so much higher than a dividend-paying regular stock, is because as a master limited partnership, they're paying no corporate taxes. So the yield's higher, number one. Number two, especially in the oil and gas business, there's depreciation and other ways of sheltering income, especially if the income is coming from oil or natural gas. Part of that distribution is tax sheltered. In much the same way, Kathleen, if I was to go out and buy a piece of rental real estate, I would have rental income, I would have expenses such as depreciation that I could use to offset part of my taxable income. And so when we talk about tax shelter, we're either talking about REITs, master limited partnerships, or investment real estate. That's the tax sheltered portion that you can use to receive a income check that is sheltered from federal taxation.
Jim, I feel like it's time to do a big disclaimer here, which is that neither you or I are qualified tax professionals. So if you have questions about any of this, we really suggest you talk everything over with your tax advisor. tax issues are pretty complex, which I'm sure is no surprise to anyone that's dealt with the IRS or filed a Form 1040 before. But over the next few weeks, Jim and I will be discussing some more about this tax planning idea, whether it's tax deferral on qualified plans, rolling over your IRA, distributions from your different 401k or tax-deferred plans, as well as taxation on Social Security. And speaking of Social Security, Jim, I'm really excited to say that I know that you talked to Yolanda York, who's the Social Security Public Affairs Director here in San Diego County. We've had her on the show a couple times in the past, and I know that we're looking forward to speaking with her a little bit more about surviving spouses and their Social Security benefits.
That's going to be coming up, and because this is an important issue, you know, there's something you may not realize, and especially you don't have to be of retirement age. There are benefits to Social Security. I call it the insurance policy I bet you never thought you had. And we're going to be talking about that. Survivor benefits, some new changes to the Social Security website. There's now a mobile app that they have. And Kathleen, they just did a survey of the two most popular names for children in this country. Any idea what they are?
Steve Jobs.
No. Now, Jacob and Sophia are the two most popular names for newborn children. If you're male, Jacob's the most popular, female, Sophia. Hadn't heard that. And even in California, those are the two most popular names.
And the Social Security admin is tracking that on their website?
Yeah, they did a survey, and those were the names that just came out. So there's a lot of great new stuff coming out at the Social Security website. As many of you are aware, they don't mail out your benefits. They used to come out, I think, once a year. They'd mail your benefits and tell you, okay, when you retire at this age, this is what they are. You can get those directly online, and there is a new section on the Social Security website. It's called What Every Woman Needs to Know About Social Security. So we're going to be talking to Yolanda about a lot of important things and a lot of ways that you can get information and benefits I bet you never knew you had. That's coming up with Yolanda York right after this. Joining me as my special guest on Lifetime Income this week is Yolanda York. She's Social Security's Public Affairs Specialist in San Diego. And Yolanda, what I'd like to do is just go over some basics, because there's a lot of things that have happened with Social Security. A lot of things have been automated. Statements are now online. You can verify and, let's say, take a look at your benefits. You now have a mobile app. So let's talk about some of the basics first. Let's say that I am now eligible for Social Security. I'm 66. I want to apply for benefits. Let's talk about how easy it is to do that online versus trying to find a local office and wait in line.
Oh, exactly. You can now take the office to your home. You don't need to spend any time at Social Security. On our website, socialsecurity.gov, so it's www.socialsecurity.gov, you can apply online. It'll take you 17 minutes or less to apply for retirement benefits. You can also apply for disability and survivor's benefits. But what is so excellent about applying online, that if you have all your documents, let's say we have your birth certificate that was already registered with Social Security, no need to bring in a birth certificate. You can do it out of the comfort of your home. You apply 3 months before you want to start collecting the benefits. Of course, the earliest you can collect is 62, but if you wait till full retirement, you get 100%. But definitely apply 3 months before you want to collect the benefits, and you can do it on our mobile website, which is something that just came out, socialsecurity.gov. Most popular questions, applying, so much information on our mobile website. I think people are really going to find it very, very good for them.
Yolanda, you also have on your website is you can estimate your retirement benefits. So, you know, for our younger listeners, if they're in their 20s, 30s, or 40s and paying into Social Security, if they're doing a little retirement planning, they can go to your website and find out what their benefits are going to be when they retire.
Right, and that's one of our other suite of services, of our online services that just started in January. So you can get your benefit statement online. So you go to socialsecurity.gov, My Social Security. It takes about 5 minutes to create an account. You have to be 18 years of age, have a Social Security number, and an email account. So you log on and create an account, and now you can see all the years that you paid into Social Security. It'll tell you if you have the adequate amount, which is 40 credits, to be eligible for Social Security. If you don't have the 40 credits, that'll tell you how many you're missing, and now you can go ahead and, you know, continue to work and earn those credits. But the beauty of it is that, yes, you now know what to expect that at the age that you plan to retire, whether it's 62 or 66. And if you really want to pinpoint that dollar amount, and I know with most financial advisors, you want your client to know exactly how much money will be coming from each part of your portfolio. So we have this retirement estimator, and you can plug in the year you're going to retire, when you're going to stop working, and you will know exactly that dollar amount that's coming from Social Security.
You know, something else that changed, I think, at the beginning of the last decade, Yolanda, and this has come as a surprise to so many people that are, let's say, eligible for Social Security, but yet are still working. It used to be if you were taking your benefits early, or let's say at age 62 or even at age 65 to 70, you would lose a portion of your Social Security benefits. But then that law was changed. So like for someone like myself, who is eligible for benefits at age 66, I could continue to work and receive my Social Security benefits. So explain that change in law, because I had mentioned this to one of my clients the other day when we were looking at his retirement plan, because he intends to work part-time as a doctor. And I said, you know, you can apply for Social Security benefits. And he said, I can? I thought I would lose my benefits if I continued to work. So he was greatly surprised by this, a pleasant surprise for him. So let's talk about that.
Oh, so it's meeting the retirement earnings test. So, yes, it changed some time, actually a long, long time ago. But the retirement earnings test for 2013, this year, if you are full retirement age, you can earn as much as you want and still continue to receive your Social Security monthly benefits. If you're under the full retirement age, which for most people right now is age 66, then you're only allowed to earn $15,120 and still collect Social Security monthly benefits. If you earn over that, then Social Security will hold $1 for every two after you've earned the $15,120. And just to give the audience an idea of what full retirement age is, if anyone born between 1943 and 1954, 66 is full retirement age. Anybody born after 1960 is going to be 67 years full retirement age. And this information, again, you can find it on our website, socialsecurity.gov. You can find out what full retirement age is for the individual listening.
I want to move on to another topic that also people may not be aware of, and that is the survivor benefits of Social Security, because one of the most devastating things that can happen to a family is the death of a wage earner, which can be financially devastating. Now, most people think of Social Security only as a retirement program. Let's talk about the survivor benefits, because in many ways, it's like an insurance policy that a lot of individuals never knew they had.
Oh, Jim, you're so right, and I'm so glad you're touching on this subject, because it is such a great misconception that people think that Social Security is just a retirement plan, but it's not. It's such a wonderful system that we have. It's a insurance, like you just stated, for the survivor, for the surviving family. It's also a disability insurance policy. So if you become disabled, you can also collect Social Security disability. But getting back to survivor's benefits, when you die, certain members of your family may be eligible for survivor's benefits, and these include widows, widowers, divorced widows and widowers as well, children, and even dependent parents. Most people never even heard of such a thing. And also, I want to say, dependent children, if you have a child that became disabled prior to age 22, they can also be eligible under the parent or as a survivor benefit. There's also a one-time payment of $255 that's paid to a surviving spouse or a minor child.
You know, Yolanda, I remember when I was going to college, one of my roommates, his parents had been killed in a car accident, and he was receiving some kind of he lived with his grandparents, but he was receiving some kind of Social Security benefit. Is this the kind of benefit that we're talking about here?
Yes, benefits for children. So a child can get benefits up until the age of 18, or 19 if they're still in high school, 3 months up until they're 19. And we used to pay benefits like many years ago up until age 22, but now the age is actually 18. And, you know, I happen to be one of those children that was receiving benefits. My dad was 32 when he died. He left my mother a widow with 6 kids and 6 months pregnant. So Social Security was there for all of us when we needed it. And, of course, we all received the benefits until we were 18. And the month of June, you know, we celebrate National Families Month. So this is a great time. I'm so glad you're bringing all this information out to your listeners, because we want people to know that Social Security is there. It's there to build strong families, you know, to get them through the rough times when crisis comes about. And knowing that if you are a widow or an ex-spouse who is now a, let's say, a divorced widow, if you've had a 10-year marriage duration, you might also want to inquire, could I possibly be eligible for a higher benefit on my previous husband? As long as you had that 10-year marriage duration, and if you were divorced, you might also want to call Social Security and say, you know what, can you check and see if I'm eligible for the benefits? And the earliest a widow or widower can collect benefits is age 60. And a widow at 60 gets 71% of the unreduced spouse's benefits, or 100% of the deceased spouse's benefits if they're full retirement age. Also, a widow can collect as early as 50 if they are disabled.
So let's say I'm in a situation where the main breadwinner, let's take a couple scenarios here. Let's take one where the main wage earner, let's say the husband dies prematurely. What are the steps and processes that you have to go through to start receiving benefits? Can you do this online, or is this something, Yolanda, you have to go down to a local office and speak with a Social Security administrator?
Yes, you can file online. You can call at 1-800-772-1213. If you want to come into an office, please call that 1-800 number. Schedule an appointment. If you come into the office, it's going to be quite a busy experience for you. So that last thing we want you to do is, you know, after a devastation like this, to have to wait a long time at our office. So you come in or you file online for your survivor's benefit. If you are a widow and you're of age 60, of course, you would be eligible for the benefit at 71%. We will need to see a marriage certificate and the death certificate. If you are divorced and you want to claim these benefits, then we need marriage, divorce, to document that you are of age and that you had that 10-year marriage duration as well.
What about a situation, the main breadwinner, as we're just talking about, you have several children. So would the widow be eligible for benefits as well as payments to the children as well?
Yes, and there's a family maximum that Social Security pays out. So when you go back to that statement that you can get on My Social Security, the benefits statement, it tells you what the family maximum is there. So like in my situation, there was 7 children in my household, in my mother's household. So if there was only $1,000, $1,000 would be divided among the 7 children. Had there been 12, it would still be $1,000. If there had been 2 children, it would still be $1,000. And that goes to the mother that's taking care of the children as well as the young children.
You know, this is important because I imagine anybody in their 20s and 30s, they don't think of premature death, but I think on your site or is reading someplace, the statistics, 1 in 8 of today's 20-year-olds will die before reaching their full retirement age of 67.
Well, you know, it's correct. And I just had a young man who died not that long ago. He's 22 years of age. He and his girlfriend had a little girl. She was 2 years of age. The girlfriend went into the Social Security office because he died in a motorcycle accident. So she went to claim survivor's benefits for this 2-year-old child, and they denied Social Security benefits to the little girl. This 22-year-old man had been working since high school, but his entire job that he had been under the table. He never paid Social Security. Everything was cash only. And the most tragic thing about it is that all he needed to have earned was 6 credits, which is about $6,300, then that little girl would have been eligible for Social Security, but because it was all cash. And this is why I'm so glad you said that, too, because it's important for young individuals to know that, you know, Social Security really doesn't take that much taxes out of your check. And it encompasses such a great coverage, like we said, retirement, survivors, disability. So it's really important that if you're going to get a job, make sure your employer covers you. They give you a W-2. If you're self-employed, please, please pay your taxes. I know that it's more because, you know, your employer isn't matching your FICA tax, but definitely you should pay your taxes if you're self-employed.
Let's move on to another situation. Let's say that I'm a female, I'm married, my husband is older than me. Let's say he is full Social Security age, 66. He applies for Social Security. He receives it, and let's say he passes away at age 68. The wife is age 61. Let's say there's a 5 or 6 year difference between the two. How would that work for that surviving spouse?
Well, the widow would then get, because she's 61, she obviously can collect benefits as early as we said at 60. But at 60, she gets 71%. She's now 61, so then it's a month-by-month reduction. But she would still get a percentage of his unreduced benefit.
Now, what happens in a situation where, let's say, both spouses, or let's take this situation, the husband was the main breadwinner, the wife did not work, and they're both, let's say, that same situation, except for in this situation, the wife is 66, the husband's 68, husband dies at 68. They're both getting Social Security. What happens to the Social Security check? Because if the husband was the main breadwinner, I assume his Social Security check would be higher.
Well, if she started collecting benefits at full retirement at 66, then she now inherits whatever he is receiving, the full benefit.
So she could take the higher check?
Yes. We are always going to pay the individual the higher of the two, whichever is the highest. You do not collect both of them. So in a family situation where you have a husband and wife both collecting Social Security, let's say he gets $3,000 a month and she gets $1,000 a month. Well, the household gets $4,000 right now. If he passes away, then this widow who is getting $1,000 can now inherit the $3,000. But of course, you know, that's the only thing you're getting now. The household's only getting $3,000 a month.
So there would be a loss of one check, obviously.
Yes.
But in this case, the widow could take the higher check, her husband's check, and she would forfeit hers, which would be lower. Yolanda, what about a situation where both husband and wife get to age 66, the husband was the breadwinner, the wife did not work? What happens in that situation? The husband gets his. What would the wife get?
The same. She would also inherit whatever he was receiving. So the thing about Social Security is that if you never worked, but you were the spouse and you took care of the household, you're insured to receive, as the widow, 100% if you are full retirement age. So in this case, this woman was not eligible for anything under her own, but let's say at 66, she started collecting 50% of her husband, which in this case would be, if he was getting $3,000, she would be getting $1,500 as a spouse. Now he dies. Well, now her benefit goes from $1,500 to $3,000 as a widow.
And that was the other thing I wanted to bring up, too. If a husband and wife are married and there was only one breadwinner, the husband applies for Social Security at age 66, and let's just assume the wife is age 66, she is eligible for 50% of his benefits, even though she didn't work.
Right, exactly. And that's the purpose of Social Security. When it started back in 1935, you need to look at the scope of why it was even established the way it was. The only breadwinner back in 1935 was the husband. You know, the wife stayed home, took care of the kids. So the policy then became that, okay, because she is your dependent, she will be eligible for 50% of your benefits. We know nowadays most women are the working force. So we now look at your benefit. If your benefit is higher than your husband, then obviously you could never get anything from him because yours is higher. But if it's not, then you're entitled to get additional to bring you up to that number. So you always take the higher of the two, whether it's your own or your spouse's benefit at the time of death.
Now, when we were talking earlier, you said for anybody born between, I think, 1943, 1954, full Social Security benefits are age 66. Anybody born after 1954, I think it was 67?
After 1960. 67 okay. Is full retirement age. So if you're born in 1955, full retirement age today would be 66 years and 2 months.
Okay. So the two key dates are 66 and 67 at this time. There's nothing, let's say, higher than 67?
No, it's not. Yeah, 67 is right now for anyone born after 1960. 67 will be full retirement age. But, you know, actually, you're kind of touching into what's going to happen in the future with the solvency of Social Security. When 65 used to be full retirement age, back in 1983, I believe when Alan Greenspan was in the committee, he knew we were having problems with Social Security. So he was the one that really was instrumental in changing the retirement age to what is now 66. And it sounds like from all the things that are happening that Social Security's retirement age will also change in the future. But for now, anyone that's 50 and older, you don't have to worry about this age. It's probably going to be for anyone 50 and under that it's going to be a different retirement age.
Yeah, because I've seen whether it's Simpson-Bowles, the Paul Ryan plan, and I've seen various proposals put forth. Of course, we haven't seen anything pass yet, but they are talking about raising that age to 69. And one thing I might want to point out, and you know these statistics better than I do, Yolanda, but when Social Security was put in force, I think the average life expectancy of a male was aged like 65 and 66, where today it's in the later 70s and the 80s for women.
It is. It's actually, I've seen 82 for men and 89 for women. And, you know, here in San Diego County, we have 267 centenarians at the moment receiving Social Security.
Wow.
Yeah, that's just our little San Diego County. Nationwide, I think the number was like 20,000 people over 100 years collecting Social Security. So, yes, longevity, we're living longer. And so, yeah, that's why the retirement age probably needs to change. And so anyway, getting back to maybe for people wanting to look at Social Security on their mobile application, in our website, we have this link for the news. And if you want to be kept abreast about what's going on with Social Security, the retirement change, last Friday, the actuary report came out as to the solvency of Social Security. You can get that information online today and see. Okay, so this number, the year 2033, what happens in the year 2033? What the actuary report came out to say was that by then, if we don't fix Social Security between now and then, the year 2033, worst case scenario will be that we can only afford to pay 77 cents on the dollar. So the question is for Congress is, what do you think they're going to do as promised to every single one of us, you know, to get 100% of our benefits? Now, what will they do to change that? It could be another retirement age, increasing the tax. I've seen 1.33 to possibly increase the FICA tax to make it more, solvent. So I would strongly suggest anyone looking to find out what's going on with Social Security, sign up for our news on our website, and I think you will be you'll be pleasantly surprised with all the information you get on our website.
Let's talk about your website as we close, Yolanda, because you have so much information there. The website is www.socialsecurity.gov, G-O-V. If I was a newbie coming to your website for the first time, let's take two scenarios. One, I'm just a working guy. I'm starting out in my career. I'm married. Let's say I'm in my 30s. I got a good job. My wife works. I have a couple kids. Where should I go? What should I do first?
My first suggestion is create a My Social Security account. Get an estimate of your future benefits. That's the most important thing anyone should do. You know, I told you about all my brothers and siblings. That's the one thing I said, you guys need to find out what your monthly benefit is. But most important is you start to see all the years that you worked and paid into Social Security. Make sure we have them listed. Sometimes if your name and number do not match, you're not going to get credit for the year that you work, and that's going to reduce your monthly benefits. So make sure you create an account on My Social Security and see what's in it for you. If you're a woman, if you've ever been married, my favorite publication of all time is What Every Woman Should Know. And you can get this publication on our website as well, socialsecurity.gov, What Every Woman Should Know. And I think between those two things, you will be very well informed about Social Security. And, you know, the last thing I'll say is for the month of May, we had this whole advertisement of baby names, the most popular baby names in the United States, the most popular baby names in California. And that was kind of a great tool to get people to come and visit our website, because when they do, they discover, like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this. I didn't know I could be eligible for benefits, you know, at 60 or 50, or I didn't even know my kids were eligible, you know, now that my husband's disabled. So lots of information of that you can find on our website.
I noticed that nationally, the most popular baby names are Jacob and Sophia.
It is. For the last 14 years, Jacob has been the number one the number one name in the nation. And you know what's kind of cool is that you can go, Jim, and look and see where you are in the order of the most popular names, which is kind of fun.
How about California? Any different? I would expect California would be a little different than Jacob and Sophia.
Yeah, and I was sort of disappointed because Yolanda wasn't anywhere in that. But no, for California, it's also Jacob and Sophia.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it is. I saw that. I'm like, okay.
Well, I don't know. Well, at least there's a lot of information here. Yolanda, as we close, I'm going to give out your website once again. And folks, if you're listening to this program, if you're either close to retirement, you've recently lost a spouse, or maybe you're just starting out working and you're thinking, you know, what are my benefits? I highly recommend you go to the site. It's very easy to navigate. You're really going to want to get to My Social Security because, once again, the statements aren't mailed. You can get them online. And the website is socialsecurity.gov. That's all one word, socialsecurity.gov. And we've been speaking with the local administrator, Yolanda York. Yolanda, thanks so much for joining us on the program.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, that completes my interview with Yolanda York. Once again, she is Public Affairs Specialist here for Social Security in San Diego. And I do want to recommend, if you are doing some retirement planning, maybe you're 10 years away from retiring, do yourself a favor. Go to the website. Familiarize yourself with it. As I mentioned in the interview, I have a doctor that's working part-time, and he was absolutely surprised and stunned to find out he could get his Social Security benefits even though he was still working, but he had achieved the magic age of 66. So there's a lot of information there, including survivor benefits, and also for you ladies listening to this program, that one section that Yolanda talked about, what every woman should know. Please do yourself a favor, familiarize yourself with these benefits you have available. You're paying for them. You might as well utilize them if you can, and know what they are when you get to, and especially if you're planning for retirement. And that website, again, is SocialSecurity, all one word, .gov. I'm Jim Poplava. On behalf of myself and Kathleen Harris, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.